around with my action on this thing. I might be way out now.
I think it sounded pretty fine, actually. Can I hear any chord in the key of F, just wherever?
Strings, and I'm having all kinds of problems. I switched to a 15 on this one for some.
String 15?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, that's some light there.
I like doing some of that blues type stuff, and sure. And I had a wound 18 on there for a while, and my neck pulled. I was doing real just straight line stuff, and I thought I can't do any bends or anything.
Yeah, wound 18. Yeah. It's
tough city. So I'm at a 10, a 12, and a 15.
Fun gauge.
Yeah.
I got down as light as 18, 12. And it was a period where I loved to play with light strings, so I can understand the hunger for more and more flexibility.
Uh-huh. And yet, you know, for doing jazz things, you know, that note can sometimes sound really weird.
Sure. Yeah.
That's a really weird spot in there. So
that's true. That's the most dangerous string. Though. It's so slinky.
Yeah. It's like
those frets. Oh, go ahead.
It's a catch 22. You've got to have it bendable for certain types of things, and yet I think it's more just getting used to the technique of playing on it. Because when I'm really careful, I don't have the problem. But when I just get sloppy, I bend it when I don't want to.
I'll tell you the truth, like a plain 20 even is extremely bendable. It just you have to work a little harder. Plain, like I just went down to a 19. This thing is easy. We can get a fourth if the frets will allow. Normally, if I were going to bend a lot, I would take care of this right away.
Stretch them out.
Real far by bending, not by pulling. This barely does anything.
Yeah.
I'm afraid both of us might be out of tune in the open position. I was trying to get with you in the middle of the board.
Yeah.
You're still close to that. So what are we talking about? The A7, oh yeah, long meter. It's changing a ballad time. If any tune is written as a ballad, we could imagine Scrabble from the Apple if we try hard enough as...
Yeah, you're going to an A minor 7th or a C6 type
board. I get
bored
going 2-5 in slow tempos. Uh-huh. It doesn't have enough of the same.
Yeah, I've been finding that when I'm playing it. I laid the chord changes down on a whole 45-minute side of cassette tape and just played around with it. And I found myself going way up here and things for this C.
Yeah, I would try to do some things, no doubt.
Comfortable. I'm trying to think of what it is in that spot. It's a,
you know what the basic
well,
chord should be?
It's a D7 chord, right. Basically. Yeah. But it's got a sharp 9.
And?
It's got a 7th and a sharp 5.
That's it.
Sharp five, sharp nine.
Do you know no? Do you know another form of this chord? That's right.
Yeah.
That's not a bad one. That's a pretty nice one. This range, this one comes out pretty strong. With the piano player voice, because there's a lot of force that way, as opposed to dealing with two stacked tritones, is usually not the clearest and meatiest sound. It doesn't throw out as many good overtones.
You don't need that third in there.
Yeah, once you have this, we don't need the other. Cool, right. Get the color tone inside the chord.
Okay. So that's on the turnaround from the A7.
Yeah, the main concept in the large sense, the overview, was the idea of this being a ballad. If we didn't even feel any intimation or anything close to it of swing time, if we just felt it as a ballad, the melody was, it was always known as a ballad. And then one day the bass player, a lot of coffee that day or what have you, and he just starts doing that underneath. Everybody goes, hey, it feels pretty good like that. What are we going to call it? And somebody says, double time. Yeah, fine. Uh-huh. Somebody else says, yeah, but how many beats are we putting on each chord if each one of these is now a beat? Instead of, if now the beats are twice as many, so somebody uses the term maybe long meter to show that there are now 8 beats, but quicker ones, double speed beats, where 4 slower ones went, or 4. Many times it's 4 little ones, 1, 2, 3, where there were just 2 slow half note beats. Uh-huh. I think that's why they write ballads in cut time signatures, to show those that the beats are so slow.
Cut time?
Cut time is when you see the C with that vertical line through it.
Yeah.
It stands for 2-2, not 2-4. I used to always assume that was 2-4, but it's 2-2.
And in practical application, how does that compare to what you're just saying?
2-2 means that the beat is a half note, because that's the bottom number, is the kind of note that gets one beat.
Right.
If a half note gets one beat, then you're in a very slow beat, usually. Uh-huh. Otherwise, it won't be used.
Right.
So, usually. Then there are 2 of them in a bar, so that means there are 2 slow beats in a bar. Like, this is one bar. Which also allows for, if that's Mickey's big hand, Minnie's little hand can be going, what we would normally feel as the beat if we again had some adrenaline or caffeine or something like that.
Right.
So, so there are 4 quarter note beats where 2 larger beats could be. They occupy the same chronological space.
And in practical application, what would be the reason for using cut time as opposed to...
To show that it's felt as the slow, slower, ballad, calm, tranquil feel.
Okay.
If it were 4-4, then everybody'd see the stuff, and the bass player would say it's in 4, and then he'd start walking in 4.
Okay.
Now, 2 isn't always tranquil. 2 can. That's 2 also.
Boom, chick.
It's because, again, this is Minnie's little hand, quarter notes, but there's this other thing where it's got boom, chick.
Uh-huh. Boom, pa.
Boom, pa.
Right.
So there are a myriad of.
So it's the changes in real time, the chord changes aren't necessarily any different.
It's a feel that is communicated.
Okay.
Which is a
lot. So the things we talked about is long meter, cut time, mm-hmm. clear on both of those, double time.
Double time is what happens when you change cut time to that swinging thing without adding any acceleration of the actual time visited per chord.
I need to hear you repeat that.
So do I. No, I really don't. No, I'll be glad to. Yeah, some of those long sentences.
That's my name.
Hi.
No, no, it's 7 o'clock on Thursday. I'll see you then, Kevin.
Okay,
bye.
That's bad, Kevin.
What was that chord with? I know it's just, it just hit me as I said it. That's a beautiful shading.
Yeah.
It caught my ear. Is this what you're playing?
Uh-huh.
Listen to that. I haven't heard anybody play that in eons. Piano players play that chord.
I love those real full-sounding chords.
But it doesn't have a third. It's so remarkable. I mean, it sounds dominant. There's no third to be found.
Right. And it wants to go here so badly. Or somewhere here.
These like to do this. They like to come in with contrary motion. Let's do an E for a second where we can use the deep bass. Let's just lower it a half step to where it's the 5 of key of E. And this tone loves to do this by law of half step. To put all of them in there together. Check this out, one note at a time. This loves to do this. You can understand that, right?
Right.
Because it's the third of the next chord.
Right.
Okay, this tone likes to do what? Also, surprisingly, in a jazz setting, can go either way, half
six. Okay. I find myself using the sixth chord almost all the time now instead of just a straight, you know.
I can definitely do that. Yeah. I love sixth chord. Now this tone, either go down or it'll come up.
Right.
If we're going to bring this one up, then we can't bring this down unless we won't have a meet, okay?
Yeah.
Then this tone goes down or up. It's up to you. Mm-hmm. So if we take some of those options and put them together, these four notes on top, all can go by half step. Right now, normally guitar players learn familiar and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a C sharp sus 2.
Yeah.
2 for short. Not an add 9, which is the pretty chord.
Yeah.
You know, like those add 9s are warm sounds, sus 2s are powerful sounds.
Is that called like a Mu major 2? Have you heard
I read
that?
This Steely Dan name or something. I didn't understand what that meant. You know, some inside joke.
Yeah.
Just like the name of the band, you know. You know what that's about?
No.
Well, I won't tell you, man. You'll find out through it. It's obscene, what society calls obscene stuff.
You gotta tell me.
Oh,
now.
Really? Oh, okay. It was the name of a particularly famous dildo. It was called the Steely Dan.
Oh, is that
in
right?
Some society, I think Victorian or something.
Pagan.
Probably. So, anyway.
So, we're going from this.
So, yeah, when we resolve into this, we have this somewhat nebulous chord, but not if we have an E bass. Then it's heard as a 1 after this 5. Those fourthy, fifthy kind of sounds.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I almost instantly do, Kevin, and maybe you do too, I found it real helpful, is to shift right away to get a feel for where it's usable and what, how it, like it's starting to thin out up here. Down in here, it's just getting meatier down in this register.
That same change, just
right,
put the inversion.
Just
around.
To see if it's happier to be in certain locales.
Right.
Or if it's equally happy, how it's different. Like here it's real innocent and delicate compared to the power it has in this register.
Yeah.
Not again as powerful as chords that have perfect intervals in them, like that's us too. So you know how that is? The perfect intervals are the ones that carry weight in music, and the other intervals carry beauty or dissonance. Not because I say so. I didn't make the rules, just nature has this thing. You play the, what a Beethoven. I mean, just an octave. That's all that power.
Right.
You know, it's, maybe you've done this before. I'll just do it very, very quickly. Okay, just say the bottom 5 strings.
What What did you tune down to?
All ones and fives in some lower key, like C sharp or C or
whatever
something.
It is, yeah.
But this is like 1-5.
See.
Even just playing three notes. I mean, all that dark, the Romans rowing or something.
Right.
It's really just sheer weight. It's interesting that nature has set it up that way. Must have been C because the G string just stayed where it was.
Yeah, you were.
Even going down a half step to E flat and trying that, you'd be amazed. Just one half step, it sounds so full.
I have a friend who used to experiment, or still does, all kinds of wild tunings. He's got Martin guitars and he plays, you know, D A D, G A D was one of his favorite. Yeah, and
Pierre Benson song.
He had an open B tuning. He did some beautiful things. He was a friend of David Lindley's, and they used to sit around and experiment with tunings.
There's no doubt that open tunings are beautiful.
I've always felt like I've got so much work to do to figure this out. You know, it'd be just a diversion that would take me away from this. If I felt like doing it every once in a while, I'll drop a D and, you know, mess around. But every time I sit down with the guitar, I have so much on my mind already, I could never see doing that.
I hear you. And my goal with them, if I were trying to present that as something to get us involved in that, it would have been all done a different way. All I was trying to do in this case was just to remind both of us probably about just the power intervals, what having strong intervals at the bottom does, as opposed to not, you know.
Right.
I mean, a chord like this doesn't sound real powerful. I mean, it's extremely colorful. But there's no power interval down there. Yeah, it's not without some solidity because it's low. This is not a weak interval. But it's not the same as what it would be if it had these as the three lowest intervals and had things stacked over that. It's like 1-5-1 on the bottom three strings. It's just all weight and power, right? It's equivalent from the inversion standpoint. It's 5-1-5. Five, one. Five, one, five. That's all power, too. So mixing those two shapes, you just have a cornucopia of all kinds of powers. If you ever need to score anything or something, it's just weight for guitar players. It's just power in it. It's down here.
Right.
Then whatever else is upstairs.
Right.
Shading it appropriately. But back to the jazz format here, whatever. That was just a left turn, so. So you had what term was it that was? You said I've got straight. I mean, we're talking double time.
Right. I had one. I'm clear on all those things. I have one question about something I was looking at in the fake book the other day. It said at the bottom it was a note about the solos. The format was AABA or something, and it said. Solos in 2, head in 4, or something
like that.
And I wasn't really clear on what they were talking about.
Okay, well, figure like this. There is such a thing as a jazz 2. I don't mean that ballad thing we were just doing, because if it were all done real straight, then it's not even leaning towards jazz, except for maybe the tone of the instruments that are playing. Like if there's an upright bass, just the tone we might associate with jazz, but
Let's
say he's playing it real straight, like a symphonic player.
Mm-hmm.
No ghost notes, no little hippity-hop notes in between.
Right.
That's different, but if he decides to add those little gestures, those inflections, do you know of what I mean?
Yeah, did you?
That's right, so if it's in 2, it would still be, but his line might be boom, 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 boom. He might have occasionally have one extra quarter in there, boom, boom, boom.
Right.
It's usually the opposite from what I think you were just mentioning. Things will get off the ground in 2, and then they go to 4.
I might have reversed that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
real common to. I shouldn't say real common. It wasn't uncommon in the old days to, especially in the 50s and 60s. You put out an album, and one track might have had. If it was a swing type of thing, they might have started it in 2. A real cool 2. I mean, wonderful, happy, and lovely.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they finally walked, it really was a different feel. They changed the energy level, take it up.
Hmm. So if I were, say I was playing the head in two.
Right. Your part's the same. Whoever's playing the head is the same.
But it's, the bass
it's
player,
else.
In two, it would just be this.
That intimates too strongly to four. So the chordal player, if he's going boom, boom, that's already punching in our right foot or left foot to go.
Okay. That's what I'm not clear on. How do I get a feel of two in
by not,
a company?
By pretending you haven't much energy at that moment, but yet you're respectful of the time.
Yeah.
Things more like that, right? That's ballad time. Scramble, right? Still be totally out of sight. I mean, a guy like Phil Woods playing the melody, phrasing it over that would still be great.
Right. But he can do what he wants on top of it, but exactly. it's everybody playing with that feel behind him.
You got it. Now, if you should start to calm as opposed to playing so more sedate, if you're starting, you might look over at the bass player. All I have to do is about one of those things, his eyes might let up because he was waiting to change,
right.
waiting for your cue.
Uh-huh.
Suddenly he's behind you doing this.
Uh-huh. Right.
I think you're understanding this now.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, back to this A7. We talked about this. The reason it came up was because I noticed that we weren't visiting the A7 too long, the others before.
Right.
And I wanted to see what you would do if you had more time to lay out some more of these longer, upper, partial, higher extension arpeggio.
Right.
As a framework for the solos anyway. Let me write a little bit and I'll be right with you.
Okay. It up here a lot better.
It sure has a nice tone up there. Bubbly.
Just stuff.
Not bad. It was pretty boppish.
Trying to put it all in this box here, you know.
Is that a new experience for you?
Completely, really. Yeah.
Do you feel constrained by it?
Kinda. But also a good discipline because I don't know it that well anywhere else either, so it seems a good exercise to get those, you know, arpeggio forms all in one spot and then stretch them out. But I tend to find myself wanting to go, you know, yeah, just to hear the variety of sound.
Right.
It's all kind of in one tonal range.
Let's look at this A13. Do you see how you can, like, kind of 90% play off of it or something? I mean, 100% if you want.
The slower I play, the more I can stay in it, you know.
Do you recall last time? We didn't have a tape last time.
Yeah.
Oh, we did. Good. And we had talked about the sharp 11 also.
Right. We got in just at the very end of the lesson.
And did we do? We talked about the southern ninth chord row. It's kind of side by side.
In just in the form, we did this.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, so that, yeah,
yeah, so that's in there.
Sometimes you can just use this as a, it's a surround tone. Actually, that's not true. This is a, you remember all those terms like SHOP and all that kind of stuff? Formal theory, books or school or anything.
How do you spell that?
ESCHAPE.
No, I don't know the term.
I think it's the French version of escape tone. Okay. This is probably one of those escape tones where you're on a note, and instead of doing the lower neighbor, you just go, you jam way out there. You know?
Right. I remember strange things like the Terce de Picardy.
Oh,
and
yeah, this fellow in the gym, yeah.
You know, just weird things like that pop up. Mordants and...
Yeah.
So... Échappé. Escape.
Échappé. Yeah, échappé. I forget. I don't know how you say it. And the appoggiatura, like a... The unprepared, the accented passing tone. If this were a chord to them, and this was a discord in the old days, then if you just started, if you went to... This tone was viewed as a non-chordal tone, right on the money.
Right.
And they call those appoggiatura. They had appoggiatura chords where you'd be... You know, I mean, they just hit a bunch of tones right on the beat and then resolve them. Out of the blue, I mean, just from nowhere, not prepared.
In classical.
Not this stuff where there's the prepared seven. That's not a appoggiatura at all, because that's prepared. G minor, C7. This tone's been, the seventh has been prepared. Versus you're cruising along. You know, just from nowhere, just bam, on these non-chord tones,
yeah,
resolving.
Right. Do you play classical or nylon?
I like the music.
Classical
I play that kind of, you know, I love the sounds, but I don't do it right
for with the whole thing, yeah.
I've tried, but it's just not for me, I guess.
Yeah.
I respect it. How about yourself?
I studied it for a little while. Carlos Gonzalez up in Oxnard is a guy who...
Noted that last time. Yeah, a little classical.
A little classical. I have a nice classical guitar that I... play a lot. Actually, I play it around the house more than I play this.
That's beautiful.
It's a good workout.
Yes, it makes us feel really easy, huh?
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah, and also I like the dots on this one. I've been playing the classical guitar. It's such a discipline.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't see how guys can go from here to here so easily sometimes. But
yeah.
About the dots. I live by the dots.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I would die by it too on stage were it not to be there.
Charlie just drilled some holes in his new classical and put glow-in-the-dark paint inside him, and he's got a good sit situation going there. I think I might do that because it does create problems. But anyway, the appoggiatura.
Do you want me to keep taking us through what's here, or do you feel like you could find all that stuff yourself?
I think it's just a matter of time working with the book and you know, maybe a little check-in on it here and there.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I'm making some progress.
You'd spoken about that you accompany singers, including your mom, and you want to be able to go from chords to single string and back and forth and all that. Do you already do that kind of texture variation?
Yeah.
Show me your backup to a song where you can incorporate something kind of like this, please. Not playing the song itself, but the backup to a song.
Okay.
What's the name of this?
My Romance.
Oh, that's My Romance.
Yeah, and E.
And you're hearing two minor, huh?
Okay. Wait a minute. No, I'm sorry. I got it.
Oh, okay. so you're going to two. You ever gone by half step or anything, or five of towards the four? See, I'm hearing this coming. Just an option. Like coming out of E dominance of some sort towards the A and five. Well, yeah, that happens pretty soon. That one's coming up. You know what I mean? Where it goes, boom. I try and save some changes if they're going to come up again, so they're not, so that they're fresh.
Right.
And sneak in some other thing that isn't going to be. Show me again your changes then, just for kicks. Maybe we can collaborate and learn some new things.
What do I do? That's what I do.
Oh,
there.
Okay. Then the two. Then the five, or 2-5. Well, just the two, huh? No five, huh? Just two of six? When you went. Then you went right. It's like you're setting up a chord by its own two, but not the five. Any particular reason?
No, just the sound line. I had just been doing it that way.
How about
I hadn't really thought of it too much in terms of the theory of it.
Oh, you just go by your ear when you do it.
On this one I had.
Wow. Okay.
What's your suggestions?
These certainly aren't written in stone. If you're on this chord, you're holding with four fingers, leave the pinky down. Change it to the bass note is actually B sharp because it's a G sharp chord. It's a third, and the third finger's on the root. Here's B sharp, the third. I know it's weird.
Oh, B sharp, okay.
And then G sharp's the root, and there's the flat seven still. And something could be C sharp minor seven or any kind of C sharp minor.
Oh, I see.
Kind of tricky to keep it ringing and not restrike it, you know, a true suspension.
I lost it. A B sharp, it's basically a five.
That's right.
Chord leading into the C sharp minor, so it's a. Just a three note chord.
So sometimes the voice leading of coming out, I'll just play it once and then I'll ask you to do the same. I better do it again and do it better. I'll do it with the, including his fourth voice here on the last chord. Sold on that fourth voice. It's like my ear wants to hear either this one or.
Sometimes I put that in too.
Or even the straight minor. See, now I've got myself all out of tune. Can I hear your straight C sharp minor voicing? Done ties like that where you go
a little quite a while ago. Yeah,
those are fun.
Yeah,
just for variety.
Yeah,
you might fool me, you know? Anyway, moving through, try to think of this chord like this. Here's a chord that you know real well, a bar chord without the full bar. You know that's the root,
right?
You have no trouble thinking of that. If you should happen to lay a tone underneath it, you're not changing the fact that this is the root, so your vision still be focused right on that fourth string.
Okay.
If you don't want to lose the name of the chord, see?
So it's just the third on the bottom.
That's correct. No problem that much.
G sharp, the third on the bottom.
It sure is like that chord, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I would even use that chord, except I love the tie, the sound of that suspension. And the this because of the fingering you'd used on your prior chord. If you'd held it this way, with a bar and then fingers backwards, like instead of two fingers up, upside down, kind of.
Yeah.
Then tie the second finger. With the note tied, truly tied, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Letting it ring.
Right. Now that's up to your pick, huh?
Wow.
So, no, I meant that sincerely. In other words, if you're doing this, it's hard not to hit that on the string. You might do pick and fingers if you're still holding it. And there you held it in your left hand, but the right hand must have touched the string, or your left hand released the pressure because it didn't ring through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that takes some time to work out the way to do that.
And it sets up that suspension as too. Because the tone's already been heard.
Noodling around in there, right?
Yep. 15. Oh, you meant a doodling the other one.
The 15.
Oh, 15 gay dummies.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Robbie Shankar version.
Right.
So then where does the song go?
Those are pretty chords, the major 7th and the minor.
Uh-huh, I agree.
So I was doing a, and now I'm doing a, maybe.
Anything like that is fine.
And it goes to the,
hey, let me grab that one again. Yeah, I'm with you. Right.
That's where it doesn't.
Okay, so, I see what you're doing. Think about this. It is not without some reason to save a juicy chord. So, maybe the first time.
No, fifth string.
Just a B7, third inversion. Or like a 2-5 of the 4, B minor 9.
A 2-5
B minor 11. Or, since we're headed back towards the 4.
I've been thinking about this part of the tune a lot. See, after it does that. Back to that again. Does it again.
What are you playing there?
A D7 flat 5. Wait.
D
D-sharp 7-flat.
And I believe you're playing a minor 7-flat 5 right now, in terms of the fact that the ear will fill in this chord like this. We won't fill in. We don't hear that note. Unless we make a huge case for it earlier. Two reasons why. One, it's more dissonant and unnatural. Unnatural doesn't mean good or bad.
Wait a minute.
It just means...
A G?
F double sharp, unfortunately. If you see it written out in music, they write it as F double sharp, D sharp root.
Why?
let me reserve about the spelling for 1 second, just because
okay.
I'm afraid to lose this loose end.
Right.
The ear will naturally take this set of intervals and assume that this note is the missing third.
Right, okay, the minor
because
third.
Of two reasons. One, it's diatonic to the key.
Okay.
Two, this tone is slightly less... quote unquote natural, forgetting if it's in any C, root, or D sharp.
Oh, I see. That would be the third if it were a D7 chord as opposed to
D sharp, right?
D sharp, right? Okay.
Just by virtue of the sound of the aggregate chord, it's a little funnier. Mm-hmm. Is this Vince? Good. I'm going to give you a paper right before the end of the lesson that has a song written out with backup chords, you know, just to see if you can get some new ideas.
Great.
But it's good for us to go through this song,
you know,
since you like it so much.
I use this chord because it sounds good behind the singer.
It does sound good.
It's got a little flat 5 down there, and the tune's written with a D7 flat 5, and the melody note is the third, I believe.
The melody's the flat 7 of the D sharp root at that moment, because the thing goes.
Yeah, you're right.
C sharp, I think, is the melody.
Please.
So let's see, so you're saying like this, let's see. Second time. And then where do you go after? What, do you squeeze this in real quick? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. Is this a C 13 chord?
Try to dig this one. There's a structure in classical music. I think you recall this, that deals with 5 as the most important key center other than 1 in the large overview.
Yeah.
And eventually, in experimenting with chromaticism, progressions like by moving lines around to get you towards a big 5 chord in a key, even if it was inverted as this one is. This is the 6 minor, relative minor of the 5. This is the 4 minor, and this is the 5. Okay, so you're cruising along. Kind of the Chopin or Brahms in it.
That's nice, yeah.
And that's, but what they've done is they made for this tone center, not this one at that moment. So you're trying to ease into the relative minor center, but it's the relative of the key you're going to that they're actually aiming for at that moment. Most sheet music should show this chord is the staple chord at that moment, after that that's like a 2-5 of this center,
right,
but not of this center. The only reason I mention it is because you said you were headed back for C sharp minor.
The change goes in the sheet music that I got was A sharp minor 7 flat 5 to a D 7 flat 5 to a. What am I doing here?
sharp
seven. D sharp seven, yeah, basically. To a C minor seven. To a C nine.
Keep going.
My romance doesn't.
Let's make sure we're in the same place. Let's start from the first time on. What is it? And they're like two or four bars more. I'm going to lay this out with basic chords, none of this fancy inversion. I'm going to even use your early changes. That's avoiding the classical changes now. I didn't put any of those in.
Yeah.
It still ends up shooting for this center once in here. Because it's already visited the center quite a bit. This center acts like a buffer, so we're in E and we want to get into B and we use this and then we find ourselves in this tone center just a bit by doing this. 2-5 and B. But the old style way was to actually play the B. Form of it because of the power, and maybe set up with its own passing chords like the 6 minor. And this is the 4 minor of where we're going, which is the B.
Okay.
Bass lines, once you get them going, you don't want to necessarily let go to, if you're going to a B chord, to reach that bass note.
So we were doing that. What was happening here?
Whenever you're approaching a key center, you can go in from the relative minor to the 4 minor. It's a chromatic progression.
Relative minor.
Right, the 6 minor.
Okay, to the 4 minor.
It's a real nice chromatic motion of tones. Here's your relative minor, G sharp minor. Here's your 4 minor. And here's your 1. Nothing fancy or profound, but it's definitely in the literature, shall we say.
So you would go from relative minor to 4 minor.
And somebody noticed the strong bass line in this progression if you were voiced a certain way. They must have, somebody must have. It's got to be in Tchaikovsky a lot, Chopin, etc. It was that big era of experimenting with chromatic lines. Alright, so this is no bells, is that the word? No bells, no guitar, or I forget, I don't know the lyrics to the song. I was getting all jumbled up in my mind.